someone pull you out of a state of panic or fear by the words they've spoken to you? Maybe they were very simple words, but somehow they helped you to refocus. So I had that experience about 6 weeks after I gave birth to Karis, our youngest child. I had to have my gallbladder removed. And it turns out I'm not a very good person when I come out of anesthesia. So the first time I had my wisdom teeth out, it was the first time I had anesthesia, and I just sobbed. I was one of the sobbers, came out of anesthesia just weeping, which is not uncommon, I found out. And then this time, though, I had almost a full-blown panic attack. Because as I was coming out of anesthesia, I was so worried about where my baby was. And I kept screaming, "Where's my baby? Who has my baby? Why isn't my baby here? I need to save my baby." And later the surgeon even told me, "You know, we thought we might have to resedate you at some point." But in the midst of all of that, the nurse came over. I don't remember much, but her voice. And I remember her just saying, "It's okay. Your baby is safe. Someone's taking care of your baby. It's going to be okay." And it seems so simple, but those words calmed me down. Do not be afraid. These are words that are spoken over and over in our Bible. And I have to admit, I'm always a little bit cynical about them because I think usually in the Bible when those words show up, people have good reason to be afraid. God is about to do something that's going to change stuff, right? And I also wonder if just saying those words actually really makes a difference. But then I remember my experience with that nurse and how her words mattered to me. And I thought, you know, maybe just hearing "do not be afraid" stops us for a second and helps us calm down and breathe enough to refocus and look where we should be looking, at God and how God is holding us in the midst of all of our fear. This reading from Isaiah today is kind of a convoluted one, and it's a lecturer's nightmare, so it got relegated to the professional because of all of the big words in it. But it's really a political story, a kingly story. There was King Hezekiah, and he was always known as a very good king. In fact, he gets to be in Jesus' genealogy in the book of Matthew, King Hezekiah. He was known as a great and good king because he always looked toward God. Throughout his whole kingdom, many of the other kings in Israel didn't. But King Hezekiah always looked towards God. And he's got this tiny little kingdom of Judah. We would call it the Israelites now, probably. But there was this tiny little kingdom. And into that kingdom comes the great king of Assyria, or a bunch of people for him. And they basically try to make the people afraid and sow doubt about what King Hezekiah is doing. And they say to him, you know, to say to all the people, you know, "We have conquered many other lands that think their gods are going to save them. So why do you think your God is any different?" And then they kind of put out some carrots. "Oh, and by the way, if you just give yourselves up to us, we'll make sure you all have your own vines and your own fig tree and your own cistern. We are going to take really good care of you." They nibble their way into the Judeans' brains, right? They try to undermine God and Hezekiah and what Hezekiah is doing. And so Hezekiah is upset, and he sends for the words of Isaiah. And Isaiah comes back to him and says, "Do not be afraid of the words that you hear. Do not be afraid of what the king of Assyria is trying to do." And Hezekiah, in his great faithfulness, turns his eyes back toward God. What faith. And what we can learn from this great king. Because we do not have the Assyrian Empire at our door trying to get us to give in or give up. But we certainly have reasons to be afraid in our world, don't we? In fact, I feel like, although it's always been true, if we look at this Bible, we are in a time when places are trying to make us afraid. the news cycles, the advertising. All of it is done, not all of it, that's not fair. There is a lot of it done to intentionally make us afraid. Afraid so that we will follow a certain person or buy a certain product. This last election cycle, we didn't get a lot of it. I didn't get a lot of flyers in the mail, but I talked to my mother in Minnesota who said, I am so glad this election is done, because they had a lot of swing elections. She said, every flyer I get in the mail is trying to make me afraid. And we'll even, you know, put the picture of the candidate in some sort of demonic pose, right? And it's coming from both sides. Everybody is saying, be afraid of that person. Be very, very afraid. And all the while, God is saying, no, look at me. Love God. Love your neighbor. Don't ignore the stuff that's going around you. Be engaged in it. But your fear is not going to help. Look at me. Love God. Love your neighbor. But the world works so hard. The devil, if you want to say that. I don't say that very often, but I think works so hard to make us afraid. It happens in the church all of the time. Even here, right, where you think we'd constantly be looking at God and at neighbor. That's what we're supposed to do. It's in our Bibles. And yet, in a time especially when the church overall is shrinking and numbers are declining and more people are questioning, you know, why do you go to church in the first place? What's that about? Churches are becoming afraid. What do we do? How do we sustain ourselves? And instead of remembering to love God and love neighbor, we hook on to all these other things that we think will save us, right? And then we start to doubt ourselves as the church and as people. Now that's me and my profession among my people, but I'm sure you feel that in your worlds too. Where are the places that people are trying to make you afraid? Not even trying, but just by the things they say. They start making you doubt what you're doing, doubt your self-worth, doubt how you're living. It happens all the time. It happens with coming to church. I was in a conversation recently with someone who was at work, and they told somebody they couldn't come to something. It was on a Sunday morning, and they had to go to, they were going to church. And the person said, well, why do you do that? And they said, for just an instant, it made me start questioning. Why do I do that? Right? We start to wonder. All the while, God is saying, do not be afraid. Look at me. Love God. Love your neighbor. The world will work very, very hard to make you afraid. But God has a different message. God comes into the world speaking peace and hope and new life. On Tuesday, as a part of a Bible study we're doing on the Psalms, we talked about gratitude. And if you would do me the honor of finding a green book near you, I want us to read a psalm together. It's Psalm 136. We have to use these. These sit here all the time. You never use them. Let's see. It's Psalm 136. So if you remember from the, for those of you who in the old days we actually used books, the Psalms look like this. And it's on page 283, little page 283, not the hymns in the back, the little numbers at the bottom. Page 283. And I'm going to read, I'll read the first part, and for every verse, there is, for his mercy endures forever. So if you would read that part. I'm actually going to start. The beginning is about creation, but I'm going to start at verse 10. Verse 10. Who struck down the firstborn of Egypt, for his mercy endures forever, and brought out Israel from among them,
for his mercy endures forever,
with a mighty hand and a stretched out arm,
for his mercy endures forever.
who divided the Red Sea in two,
for his mercy endures forever,
and made Israel to pass through the midst of it,
for his mercy endures forever,
but swept Pharaoh and his army into the Red Sea,
for his mercy endures forever,
who led his people through the wilderness,
for his mercy endures forever,
who struck down great kings,
for his mercy endures forever,
and slew mighty kings,
for his mercy endures forever.
Sion, king of the Amorites,
for his mercy endures forever,
and Og, the king of Bashan,
for his mercy endures forever,
and gave away their lands for an inheritance,
for his mercy endures forever,
an inheritance for Israel, his servant,
for his mercy endures forever,
who remembered us in our low estate,
for his mercy endures forever,
and delivered us from our enemies,
for his mercy endures forever,
who gives food to all creatures,
for his mercy endures forever.
Give thanks to the God of heaven,
for his mercy endures forever.
This psalm, they think, was written to be used in worship in ancient Israel. And it was used to remind the people of their history and about how all through history, even though the world was working to oppress them, that there were things to be afraid of, God's mercy still endured. Some translations say steadfast love instead of mercy. His steadfast love endures forever. This is not your history. It's the history of, I guess you could say it is in some ways, as we are Christians come from Jews. But I'm talking about your own personal history. These are not the things God has brought you out of. But you could stick in your own things, couldn't you? What are the difficult things that you would put in this psalm for yourself? And yet through all of those difficult things you could say, but his steadfast love endures forever. Even though you have been in places of fear, even though you have very good reasons sometimes to be afraid, his steadfast love endures forever. That is the message of God, over and above what the world tells us. And so we turn to God instead of to our fear, because I can tell you, our fear is not productive. And our fear, even though it is used to help us survive, that's good, but most often what it does is turn us in, away from loving our God and our neighbors. A couple of weeks ago, poor Vicar Dawn gave a sermon. It was a great sermon. But in it, she gave the example of college application process. And in that college application process, all of the things you have to do to get into these colleges. And her point was that all those things that matter in the college application process don't necessarily matter to God. But for some of the people in that college application process, as soon as they became afraid, they were not able to hear anything else. They were not able to hear the words of God. And doesn't fear do that to us? We know. Fear turns us in. It stops us from listening. It makes us retrench. And all the while, God is telling us, do not be afraid. Look at me. Love God and love your neighbor. Hezekiah did it, and may we too, because we have a God who breaks into whatever fears you are living in, whatever sadness or pain you are living in. We have a God who, in the midst of all the other words swirling around and swirling in our heads, and I know they are there, they're there for me, I'm sure they're there for you, who came into the world and dwelt among us. And how does it say it in John? The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. A different word. A word of peace, a word of hope, a word that casts out all fear, so that we might turn back to God and remember what it is we are called to do. Love God and love our neighbor, because his steadfast love does endure forever. And knowing that, is more powerful than any fear-mongering the world can throw at us. So cling to it. And then look at God, and love your neighbor. Amen.